Okay, so I have. Does anybody need a timeline for this class? For right now, we're in Saul's reign. Okay. I have updated it a little bit, and I will go over the updates so you can have it. And then I realized something this morning that I need to change as well from this new updated timeline. So as I'm reading, there are things that occur that I completely... Yes, that's the right one there. So here are a few changes. When I was reading through, when I finally got to 1 Chronicles, I realized something. 1 Chronicles chapter 21. In 1 Chronicles chapter 21, near the end of that chapter, I think it's the second to last verse, it tells us the location of the tabernacle and the altar, that it had been moved to Gibeon. So I thought, well, when did this happen? There's no indication anywhere throughout all of the 1 Samuel or 2 Samuel or 1 Chronicles that it had been moved to Gibeon. So when did this occur? So I thought, well, what is Gibeon? Gibeon is the power base for King Saul, right? So if Gibeon is the power base for King Saul, then perhaps Saul moved the tabernacle there. Remember, the Ark of the Covenant is in Kirjath-Jearim and will stay there. And it will stay there throughout Saul's reign and through the first little bit of David's reign. So the Ark of the Covenant is separated from the tabernacle and the altar at this point. So I've changed this. I don't know if you remember. I changed this week to 3 untimable events. It was 2. The third one, who knows when it was moved to Gibeon. The last time we saw it in our current discussions is in Shiloh. And it's in Shiloh in 1 Samuel chapter 14. We see that the tabernacle is there because that is where the high priests say that they are at. Whenever they list all the high priests, they say that they're in Shiloh. But then this morning, I remembered something else. So it is not reflected in the new timeline. Do you remember, at some point we'll get to it, but David being on the run... He comes to the priests in a town called Nob. Do you remember that? The priests. Do you remember Jesus talking about when David ate the showbread? Most people recognize that. This is that instance. I believe 1 Samuel, I looked it up this morning, 20:21, somewhere around there. And so he is... eating the showbread, and where is the showbread located? In the tabernacle, right? So, also an ephod is there at this point. So, I believe that during the time when I have on your timeline, around the time David is born, around Saul's campaigns, in between 2936 and 2944, after creation, according to this timeline, that the tabernacle was moved to Nob. And then what do we remember? What did Saul do in Nob after he realized David was there? He has the priests killed. So, I believe after, at his, you know, due to his paranoia, because one thing that we can understand is Saul was a bit paranoid, perhaps justly, I mean, who knows, but he was rather paranoid, so I think he probably moved the tabernacle to Gibeon after this event, after having the priests killed in Nob. So that's where that comes from. Another thing I changed on the timeline are the Psalms a little bit. I realized on the timeline I handed out initially that the Psalms, some of the Psalms were repeated, and I mentioned it last week. but I didn't say where exactly because I didn't highlight it and I didn't want to have to search for it while I was up here. But I highlighted them now. At the bottom of the first page, I took away Psalm 26. So if you want to correct that, I mean, that's up to you. I took away Psalm 26. In the second page, there's a green box. That green box indicates when David is on the run. So I have David on the run in that green box while Saul is after him. And at the last entry in that green box, I have taken away Psalm 35 and Psalm 108. Because they're already placed somewhere else, and I think they better fit that other location. All right, and there's none on the third page. So I just wanted to make those corrections if you needed to. All right. Next, I want to talk about, well, before we move on, what questions do we have? Okay. Next, I would like to talk about, I think we're in David's Mighty Men. And they are located, mentioned in two different places. I talked about a little bit about them last week, but I wanted to have that. I wanted to have that mentioned here. I forgot to start this. I wanted to mention the David's Mighty Men at this point because we have two locations where they are, and the lists are different. Not much different, mind you, but they are different. Let's take a look at 2 Samuel 23. The reason why I placed them here in the timeline is because of 1 Chronicles 11. The way 1 Samuel appears to be put together is 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel. It appears to be a few different authors, and some people added on something here or there. Now, of course, they are inspired, of course. At the end of 1 Chronicles, we see a list of who those authors may have been. Samuel, Nathan, and Gad. So these three people were likely writing about David's reign and wrote 1 Samuel in parts. And so we see, of course, Nathan writing certain parts, Gad writing others, and you can kind of tell because of the focus in some aspects. Whatever the case, we have some things that are recorded a little bit differently in 1 Chronicles. And I believe it's recorded in 1 Chronicles 11 right after David reigns in Israel overall. Remember, he reigns 40 years, 7.5 years he reigns in Hebron over Judah only, and then for 33 years he reigns in overall Israel in Jerusalem. Right? So at that point in 1 Chronicles 11, we see the list of the mighty men. And so I think that the reason why the chronicler puts it there is because they were significant before this point. They were the ones who helped David get to this point. David did not do this on his own. Of course, he had God's help, but he also had the help of his mighty men. And we can see in 2 Samuel 23 a list of these mighty men as well toward the end of his reign. This is the second to last chapter of the book. Also, I put it here because at the beginning of 2 Samuel 23, it says, "These are David's last words." Well, if these are David's last words, then how can these things occur after that? So that's another reason for putting these things here. So let's take a look a little bit about David's mighty men. Now, remember a couple things we've talked about in the past already. The names are often some of the things that are most prone to copyist errors are in names and numbers. And so we'll definitely see that here when comparing 2 Samuel 23 and 1 Chronicles 11. But there are a couple things I wanted to point out here. 2 Samuel, there are three men mentioned in 2 Samuel 23 in the first section. There is Josheb-Bashabeth, the Tachmonite. He was called Adino the Esnite. And so that's verse 8 of chapter 23. Next, in verse 9, after him was Eleazar, the son of Dodo the Ahohite. And then after that is Shammah, the son of Agi the Hararite. So we have these three men mentioned. And one of the things that it says that Shammah did in verses 11 and 12, the Philistines had gathered together into a troop where there was a piece of ground full of lentils. So the people fled from the Philistines. But he stationed himself in the middle of the field, defended it, and killed the Philistines. So the Lord brought about a great victory. So this is, you read these things, and these are heroic things. I mean, he's just standing in the middle of a field, and he's fighting off all the Philistines. Man, that's the stuff of legend, right? So when we move to first, not that it's false, of course, this is the Bible, so we believe it, and that's right. But I'm just saying this is amazing things. That's why they're called mighty men. But then we move to 1 Chronicles chapter 11. And we see the list begin in verse 11. There is Joshobeam, the son of a Hachmonite, chief of the captains. And he lifted up his spear against 300, killed by him at one time. So that's Joshobeam. He is the same person as Josheb-Bashabeth. And now the reason why I mention that is because they are listed as having done similar things, although the number is a little bit different. We see the number of people killed in 1 Chronicles 11 to be 300. And in 2 Samuel 23, we see that it is 800 men at a time. So again, numbers, one of the things that are subject to copyist error, although we could likely reconcile these two things. Perhaps they're talking about one instance where he killed 800 men and another instance where he killed 300 men. Perhaps because the names are a little bit different, the people are different. But this is unlikely. I think that these are the same people, same person. It says the Tachmonite in 2 Samuel 23, and it says Hachmonite. Looking at the Hebrew, that's essentially the same word. It doesn't look like the same word, but it's essentially the same word. So in English, it's a little bit different. So that's the same person. Another, the one who killed the Shammah, all the people in the field of lentils. Well, it says that Eleazar was the one who did that in 1 Chronicles 11. After him was Eleazar, the son of Dodo, the Ahohite, who was one of the three mighty men. He was with David at Pasdamim. Now there the Philistines were gathered for battle, and there was a piece of ground full of barley. And the people fled from the Philistines. And they stationed themselves in the middle of that field, defended it, and killed the Philistines. So the Lord brought about a great harvest. So that one says barley, another one says lentils. Different person. Perhaps this is a different event. But Shammah is not mentioned, at least not in the list in 1 Chronicles. So there is that as well. I just wanted to mention a few of these differences because I want us to be ready for them. I want us to be prepared if somebody says, well, why are there these differences? Now, granted, the likelihood of that happening is not very. But there are different, there are people who try to attack the Bible all the time, and they'll look at these passages and be like, well, these don't match. Why don't these match if the Bible is God's word? Well, because of copyist errors, which we talked about a few weeks ago. But also, maybe they're talking about different people. It doesn't exactly have to fit our understanding of what actually happened. Another thing that I want to point out, because some of the names are a little bit different here or there, but not to a major degree, not enough that it's something I need to call out, because we've already talked about that. But another thing I want to point out is at some point, 1 Chronicles lists a lot more people. It goes through the same thing that 2 Samuel does, but then at some point it's like, no, and then here's a whole lot more other people. Verses 41 through 47 of 1 Chronicles 11 lists several more people who are part of David's mighty men. And I find that interesting that the chronicler would list these people when they are not necessarily listed in 2 Samuel. Perhaps the chronicler thought these people were more important than the writer of 2 Samuel. But I just wanted to point those out as well. This does not make a contradiction. This just means that they wanted to include more people in the list. Okay. Hopefully that's clear enough. All right, so David's mighty men. There are a couple things that happen here. One of the things I want to point out is I have no idea when David's mighty men did their thing. There is no indication exactly. I think it is during Saul's reign, but no indication of exactly when. There is an indication in 2 Samuel, I'm going to focus on this one, 2 Samuel 23:13 through 17, there's a passage there that talks about an instance, and it gives a timestamp, and that is during Saul's reign, and we'll talk about that when we get there. There's another one, another thing that's talked about, Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada in verse 20. It says he kills the Egyptian. Now, this could be during Saul's reign, but it's not mentioned that the Egyptians are attacked at this point. Later, during this period, when David defects to the Philistines, they fight the Egyptians at some point. So I think it's possible that that is an event that Benaiah could have taken a part in. And we'll talk about that when we get there as well. So there are different possibilities for when these things occur. Oh, I don't think it was last week, it might have been 2 weeks ago, I mentioned the Haggites. And I said, you might not remember, I listened to the recording and I'm like, oh, I said that. The Haggites, I said, were only mentioned in the Chronicles. That's not true. It's also mentioned in the Psalms. So I just wanted to make that little correction. All right, so David, he is... You know, Saul doesn't like him very much, as you can imagine. He believes that, again, I mentioned Saul's paranoia. He is paranoid about David. And we see in 1 Samuel chapter 18, this paranoia come about very strongly, where he tries to kill David with a spear. And I made my thoughts known about how many times that occurred. And then he has him go to the Philistines for a dowry for his daughter Michal. And so that dowry is 100 foreskins of the Philistines. And David goes above and beyond and gathers 200. Saul thinks, well, this would be great. Initially, he thinks this would be great. I'll have the Philistines kill him. He can't possibly accomplish this, so the Philistines are going to kill him, and I won't have to do it. And so what happens is, of course, he does do it. He is victorious, and he gains the hand of Michal. So Michal loves him. Michal loves David, and so he wants to protect him. And so we see at the end, or near the end of this chapter, that Saul wants to kill him and lies in wait and goes after David while he's in bed and with Michal. And so that, Michal hides him and he scurries off because David realizes what's about to happen, so he leaves. And so David is now on the run. David is on the run, and that lasts from chapters 19 to 24. He is on the run during those chapters, running from Saul. There are no time statements in this section at all. So, at least not that I could see. Maybe the next day or something like that, but nothing to indicate a year. So I don't know when all this occurs exactly. I surmise, based on my estimation of how old he was when he defeated Goliath, about 20. That was my guess, if you recall. So then that means 10 years between here and the death of Saul. So all this could have taken place in 10 years, perhaps less, perhaps more. We really aren't entirely certain how long that takes. So he's on the run, and some interesting things happen. I don't think I necessarily need to talk about every single thing that happens. This is an interesting things that do occur. At some point, do you remember when Saul was first chosen to be king? One of the things he did was he prophesied, right? Is Saul among the prophets now too? Is one of the proverbs that had come out from this this time. Well, it happens again. It happens a second time. Here in chapter 19 of 1 Samuel. In 1 Samuel 19. David runs to Samuel. David seeks refuge with Samuel. And so he goes up there, and Samuel protects him. And we see that Saul is told that David is with Samuel. So he goes up to Samuel, and Saul falls down. I mean, you think, for instance, that he is lost. That Saul's about to come. David is, all is lost. Saul's about to come. He is bigger and more powerful than Samuel and David. At this time, we see I have on the timeline Samuel is 106, perhaps older at this point. We see that. That David is just a young man. He's 20 or so, perhaps a little bit older, perhaps a little bit younger. He's a young man. So Saul is this big man, head and shoulders above everybody else. And he's coming, and all is lost. And then God intervenes. And he starts falling over. He starts prophesying. And it says at the end here, so he went there. Verse 23, 1 Samuel 19. So he went there to Naioth in Ramah. Then the Spirit of God was upon him also, and he went on and prophesied until he came to Naioth in Ramah. That's talking about Saul. He also stripped off his clothes and prophesied before Samuel in like manner, and lay down naked all that day and all that night. Therefore they say, is Saul also among the prophets? So a second time this occurs. And this saves David, and it gives him an opportunity to flee once more. You see clearly that God is on David's side. Jonathan is not entirely convinced Saul's, his father's desire to kill his best friend David. And so he needs to be convinced. And so there's an instance in 1 Samuel 20 where it's pretty nasty. And there are some time statements there, something about the next day, about the new moon occurring. And the new moon is the first of the month. And so that's when they often had their feasts. There is no indication exactly which new moon this is, which year, what time of year exactly. It's just a new moon. And so they have a feast at some point, and then another feast the next day. And of course, they're the king, so they're probably doing some things to that effect. And David is not there. And so Saul is like, well, where is David? And the first night, he's like, well, maybe he's just not here. Maybe he's sick or something. So the next night, he's like, well, where's David? And he is he's upset. He starts yelling at Jonathan and calling him names. and it's pretty a nasty thing. I mean, you can see how terrible Saul is treating his son at this point. Of course, he again, his own paranoia, Saul's paranoia is taking over. Don't you think I know that you are friends with David, that you're siding with David over your father? Well, yeah, he is, essentially. And so he tries to protect David at this time. And then the priests at Nob, and we're out of time. So we will start talking about David being on the... Well, we did start talking about that. We'll talk about the priests at Nob next time. Yes. Priests at Nob, he runs to Achish, and... That's where the Philistines are, Fain's madness. There's a lot of good stuff coming up. So we'll talk about that next.